As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Wings for Breakfast, our twice weekly Red Wings podcast here on The Athletic, presented by BetMGM. I am Max Boltman. With me as always is Prashant Iyer, and we got some clarity today on a subject that I know a lot of you have been asking about, obviously one that's very important for the Red Wings and for Tyler Bertuzzi, and that was the update today that Tyler Bertuzzi did undergo back surgery in New York last Friday. The Red Wings called it a successful surgery. Obviously, though, back surgery for a young player, that's one of the more major procedures that you can have, stemming from a hockey injury here.
Yeah, I mean, back surgery is always the scary one. And obviously, we don't know exactly what it is. So it's, there's no point in really speculating on likelihood of him being healthy and things like that. I think the team's already said that they expect him to be at 100% for the start of next season. But that back injury is sort of a scary thing after watching what Henrik Zetterberg kind of had to go through, in 2016 with his back injury in the Olympics and being able to recover and come back from that. So certainly a scary thing for a guy who is figuring to be one of the core forwards for the Red Wings moving forward in their rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, and so I guess we'll kind of have to wait until next time we see Tyler Bertuzzi to see how he's doing. I mean, Jeff Blashill kind of made the point today. Every person is different. Every recovery is different from something like this. So, Danny DeKeyser's recovery from back surgery obviously took an immensely long amount of time. They, meanwhile, are saying they expect Tyler Bertuzzi back for the start of the 2021-22 season. Well, that's in, 5 months. So that would seem to be a positive outlook on this. But it's going to be a wait and see. And I think obviously the contract negotiation becomes complicated by a situation like this and what you do with that. He's 1 year from unrestricted free agency. So if you do a 1 year deal, it's a 1 year deal right to unrestricted free agency. If you do a long term deal, that there's obviously, there's complications to that too, if there is any uncertainty. So I don't think that's the important thing today. We'll have plenty of time to get to that in the coming, days and weeks on the outlook there. But I think the important thing right now is the Red Wings said it was a successful surgery. And certainly I think I speak for both of us when I say we hope Tyler, recovers well and is in good spirits as he gets through these, especially these early parts.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the number one focus for him moving forward is you just hope he's able to recover well, able to get back on the ice, able to get back to playing and get back to being a big contributor for the Red Wings moving forward.
Yep. Robbie Fabry also announced today won't play this weekend. So his season is over. He hasn't played in weeks now either. He was back on the ice today in a, full practice jersey. He had previously been in a non-contact jersey. So that's actually honestly probably promising news more so than any of the other will not return this season situations. I mean, Robbie Fabry's missed enough time now, though, that It just would have been probably difficult for him to get back into, the kind of game ready situation that you need to be, especially for a back to back and with two games left. I mean, I don't know if it was just precautionary or what, but I certainly think precautionary would have made a lot of sense in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, again, the huge risk when you bring a guy back who's missed so many games in a row for just a couple games here is you're risking injury, and that's just another thing that he doesn't need after kind of the challenges he had to stay healthy for this season. So it just didn't make a lot of sense to really go and put him through that, in my opinion.
Yeah. So Red Wings will have their last two games against Columbus Friday and Saturday. They'll do it as they have been for the last couple of weeks, very shorthanded. But you'll continue to see, looks from a lot of the young players and whatever they can show and prove. And, they'll be very motivated to put, some good things on film going into the off season and so that the decision makers can, have a good impression left in their minds as they go about conceptualizing what holes they have and what they need to fill this off season. I think one interesting development that happened today came out of Sweden. Johan Svensson of Expressen reported that Jonathan Berggren will not return to Skellefteå, which is his SHL team. And, I think the logical conclusion there would be, okay, does that mean he's coming to North America? Berggren has not yet signed an ELC with the Red Wings. I don't believe he can until he's released from the national team, which may be some time yet. But once his obligations there with the Swedish Federation are up, he could sign an ELC, and I think that would put him in position to come over to North America and either challenge for a spot with the Red Wings or start his transition to North America in Grand Rapids, one of the two potentially.
Yeah, I think that the writing's certainly on the wall here that as soon as he's eligible to do it, I think he'd have to expect he gets that deal signed. Obviously, he doesn't necessarily have to sign as the Wings have his rights all the way through 2022, the summer of 2022. But you'd have the next natural step after him, being so successful at the SHL level this year really is the next challenge is either the AHL or the NHL. And so it'll be interesting to see which way he goes, but either way, expect him to get his ELC done this summer and be over in North America for next season.
Timing-wise, I mean, Berggren did not light up the SHL playoffs. I think he had 4 assists in 12 games, no goals in the SHL playoffs, but he did just light up a couple of exhibitions for the Swedish national team with 4 assists in 2 games out of 10 total goals scored by the Swedish team against Norway. So that is a pretty good note, I guess, to end his I guess he could still make the world championship team for Sweden, which I think, would be a very promising sign for him. And honestly, if he's able to do that, I think it maybe even ups your confidence that he could challenge for a spot in the NHL right away. I think when you look at what the playoff production was, which was, pretty far cry from his regular season production, that would have been one of the areas to point to and say maybe he's not ready to step right in to the NHL. If he makes the world championship team and looks and holds his own there, yeah, I think that may be a more promising indicator for him.
Yeah, I mean, the playoff numbers are sort of tough, to wrap your head around. I mean, he actually pulled up 3 points in the first round against Luleå in that series. And then obviously Rögle being as good of a defensive team as they were, I think that was certainly a big challenge for Skellefteå to be able to score against that team. And I think Berggren was no exception. He only got 1 point in that series there. I think my sort of bias is not to read too much into the playoff numbers, given how impressive he was through the regular season. And even still, 4 points in 12 games is not necessarily anything to turn your nose up at relative to his scoring production. So I don't know that I would necessarily use that to say one way or another whether he's, I guess, NHL versus AHL. I think it'll really come down to what training camp looks like and, how does he do when he has less of a perimeter to work on, because that was always the big knock on him was he was, far too much of a perimeter player, at least early on. I think he's been a lot more aggressive in getting towards the middle of the ice. Obviously, if you're talking about an international rink versus an American rink, the big or North American rink, you're knocking 15 feet off and width. And so, when you lose that 15 feet or 7.5 feet on either side, and the defense is that much closer to you, how well can Berggren continue to attack the middle? That'll, I think, be what ultimately dictates whether he starts in the AHL or the NHL.
I don't see a reason why he won't be able to make that transition in time. But I just think, as always, you want to know what the impact is and how long it takes for him to make. I mean, like, Bergeron has a lot of tools. It's not like he's someone who just stands there on the perimeter and uses good vision to pick out passes. He's a good skater. He has skill. And he does have that vision to create those plays. I still think he's going to be an effective playmaker in the NHL. He doesn't have, kind of an eye-catching shot per se. It's something he can work on. I think the more he's able to infiltrate the middle of the ice, especially with his passing, it could make his passing play up. If you make those passes from a dangerous area with two guys close to you, probably means they're not close to the guy you're passing to, or at least that person's going to have some time and space. So we'll see what happens here with Berger. I mean, he's a guy that I've tried to be a little more cautious with, just because you do wonder how much of the production translates and how quickly. But he's certainly a guy that I think there's lots of room to be excited about. You know, the way he scored in Sweden this year doesn't happen extremely often for players his age.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part about it, is I think the Red Wings are actually in somewhat of a unique situation, because if you kind of go back through their draft history, really the last, I think, prominent player they had that they had drafted out of a European league that they were then tasked with bringing over in a short period of time was probably Thomas Tatar back in the 2009 entry draft, and how they kind of proceeded to bring him along. And obviously, you know, he went into Grand Rapids and started there. But, you know, it's something the Red Wings haven't necessarily been tasked a whole lot with. I mean, Kelly Yarncroc was another guy, but they ultimately traded him before he ever really cracked the lineup. And outside of that, there's not really a whole lot of European players that they've taken at the top of the league or at the top of the draft to really have, I guess, this kind of experience. So I'm very curious to see what their approach is going to be here moving forward, because they're going to obviously have this with Berggren. They're going to have this with Albert Johansson. They're going to have this with Lucas Raymond. And then in years to come, they're going to have to deal with, you know, Emil Vierro, and Theodore Niederbach and other guys along those lines. So I'm kind of interested to see what their, I guess, development path looks like for each of those guys.
I mean, one of the guys who at least scored at a comparable rate at the same age in the SHL was Victor Arvidsson. So as a 20 to 21 year old in the SHL in 2013-14, he had 40 points in 50 games. He comes over, spends most of the next season in the AHL and dominates the AHL. And then he gradually, you know, takes on more and more of a load in the NHL. And I'm not saying that I think Jonathan Berggren is going to be Victor Arvidsson, but I'm just kind of giving you, you know, that, you know, in terms of stature, pretty close there. Berggren might be a little bit bigger, actually. And in terms of, you know, that level of production in the SHL at that age, it still took Arvidsson some time to make that adjustment in the AHL. But we will see. I mean, Nashville also, I don't remember how Nashville was in 2014-15, but they seem to me, if I recall right, that they were still in a better spot than the Red Wings are right now in terms of competition for someone like Berggren to try to beat out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were only a couple years away from being a Stanley Cup team, yep. Right? So, you know, that was still a pretty good Nashville Predators team, and obviously a much better situation than where the Red Wings are right now. So that may have also kind of allowed Nashville to slow play that a little bit more than Detroit potentially could. That being said, you know, you kind of look at the way the Red Wings roster is shaping up for next season, and it sort of depends, you know, going back to the last episode, how many of those veterans do you bring back between Luke Glendening, Sam Gagne, Bobby Ryan? You know, mm-hmm. If you don't bring any of them back, then potentially there is, you know, a top nine spot for Jonathan Berggren to be able to jump right in. If you bring one or two of them back, then I think it becomes that much more difficult for him to crack the lineup, and they may elect to slow play it a little bit by at least seeing him in Grand Rapids to a certain or for a short period of time before moving him forward.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll see how that goes. To me, you look at the way that the Red Wings handled some of their veterans this year. I mean, let's say they do bring back two of those three veterans, Glendening, Gagne, Ryan. With the way that they handled veterans this year, I know it was kind of a constant frustration for fans who would often see at least, you know, one or two of these veterans who were in the lineup, but they also were pretty willing to scratch guys like Filippula, guys like Nielsen, depending on the game. And certainly I do think all three of those players that we just mentioned, Glendening, Gagne, and Bobby Ryan, are more effective than Filippula and Nielsen have been. But to me, that does signal that if you sign those guys and one of your prospects pushes through, I do think that there's a path for them. They just probably have to be good enough to warrant it.
Yeah, I think the big difference will be, I think my expectation is the taxi squad goes away, and I think that really allowed Detroit to be a little bit more aggressive with those veterans, being able to scratch them and move them down to the taxi squad while still keeping them on the active roster. You had that expanded roster, which allowed them to do that. I don't know that they're going to be able to do that as much this season if the taxi squad does go away, like I think most people think it will. But that being said, you know, the difference will be what they do with Franz Nielsen. I guess we still don't know what they do with him, whether they buy him out or they kind of ride out this last year. If they buy him out, then that's another veteran that you don't necessarily have to have the ability to scratch. And then it comes down to, well, if you're re-signing Gagné, Glendening, or Bobby Ryan, I don't know that you're necessarily scratching those guys. Otherwise, you may be considering that may be an odd kind of decision to sign. And so really at that point, the veterans left up front, Richard Ponick, that's it, right?
Right.
So, you know, it might be a little bit interesting to see how the Wings could create space next year, which is why I think what they do with those three veterans is going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's one of the earliest big decisions that I see, and it may not be one of the earliest that are decided. You know, I mean, you're probably waiting until the expansion draft has concluded to make that decision and sign any of them, although I'm not sure any of them would be real threats to be claimed by Seattle. It probably wouldn't be something you had to wait on, but it's kind of the, if you have time, use it, I guess. You don't really lose anything by waiting in this case if you're Steve Yzerman.
Yeah. Yeah, you really don't. And honestly, it allows you to see, you know, allows you to get some more information to, again, better inform you how to proceed at that point. Because, you know, if Evgeny Svechnikov or Jovani Smith's claim, that informs you in one direction. If it ends up being, you know, a Dennis Cholowski or a Gustav Lindstrom, then that informs you in a different direction. So I think there's no real rush on Yzerman to kind of sort that out, you know, at least at this point.
So if you project that the Red Wings hold on to, whether by protecting them or whether by them not being claimed in the expansion draft, if you project that the Red Wings are going to hold on to both Adam Ernie and Vladislav Namestnikov up front, it seems like you would have, what, 10 forward spots that are kind of spoken for right now between Dylan Larkin, Tyler Bertuzzi, Robbie Fabry, Filip Sedina, Jacob Vrana, Michael Rasmussen. Are you giving a spot to Joe Valeno yet?
I mean, it certainly seems like it's trending that way, so I think you might want to err on that side.
And then Namestnikov and Ernie, that'd be 9. Richard Ponick would be 10. So that's kind of 10 forward spots spoken for, at least on the roster. So you probably have 3 to 4 more forward roster spots there.
Yeah, yeah, if you're going for your 14 forwards or 13 forwards.
So that leaves some decisions to make. You can sign some of those guys that we mentioned, your Glendennings, your Ryans, your Gagnés. You can bring in some outside free agents. You can promote a couple prospects, certainly Jovani Smith knocking right on that door. And maybe you do get into a Jonathan Bergeron or a Lucas Raymond. To me, that's kind of the early contours of what the forward decisions look like this offseason.
Yeah, and ultimately it'll be really interesting to see, because I think there's so many different avenues that Yzerman can go down that it's just so hard to project. But either way, I think the easy thing both of us can say is Jonathan Bergeron's going to be in North America next year.
It would certainly seem that way, although let's wait until the ELC, the ink is dry and all that stuff before we proclaim it too boldly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess unless you think he's signing over in the KHL, I'm not sure what the next challenge is for him.
Fair enough. All right, so the main segment we're going to do today comes courtesy of Phil Roberto. As a reminder, if you have a topic that you want us to spend a little more time on than we get the chance to with some of these mailbag questions, you can always email it to me at mbultman@theathletic.com. That's mbultman@theathletic.com. Or you can tweet it to either Prashant or myself. So Phil emailed this one in, and we're going to kind of talk through where the Red Wings are at with all their prospects. It's a good time at the end of the year to kind of look back on the progress of some of these guys, what their seasons held, what we think is kind of next for them. And so we can start right at the top with one that we've talked about the most. Probably don't need to talk about it a ton right now, but Moritz Seider is actually the only one whose season's really not over, as he still goes in the SHL finals, although his team's actually down in their series right now. What did you see from Moritz Seider, and what's next for him?
I mean, what can't you say about him right now? He's just been an absolute dynamite in the SHL. He's been arguably the best defenseman in the league over there, doing it at 19 years of age. I mean, He looks more than ready to come over to the NHL, and that's exactly where you'll see him next year. But not really much more to add on top of that. He's just been outstanding.
Yep, I agree. And I'm sure you've seen, as we have, you know, all the highlight clips of him running people over in the SHL. He's also scored at a nearly unprecedented rate for a player his age in the SHL. Did slow down just a little bit in the playoffs. But again, you expect that. That's when the hockey gets harder. And the offense isn't necessarily the calling card. It's one of the great things about his game is if he scores, it's just a huge bonus because it's not the pillar of his game. If he scores, that's what takes him, you know, from a really good player to a great player. But even if the puck's not going in for him or off his teammate sticks, off of his passes, you know, Moritzider's probably going to make a big impact on the Red Wings in relatively short order.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be a kind of guy that's going to tilt the ice in your favor. And whether it's him recording the points or the guys in front of him, play is going to be going in the favor of the Red Wings.
Yeah, 60% shot share last I checked in the SHL form.
Yeah, yeah, 60% for the regular season. I think when I last checked the playoffs prior to the finals starting, he was at 57%. So, I mean, he's still doing it against the best teams in the league there.
Pretty outstanding. All right, and then his, well, it's not his fellow Swede, but his fellow SHL player is Lucas Raymond, fourth overall pick from last year. Injury shortened season. He's missed the last 2+ months. I mean, Frölunda's season has been over for a couple weeks now. What do you see in store for Lucas Raymond? He has now signed his ELC.
Yeah, I mean, you've got his ELC signed. I think, you know, if you're Detroit, you could certainly opt to leave him in Frölunda for another year. My bias would be to bring him over to North America. I think we've talked a little bit on the show about how Frölunda's system is kind of a lower event system, a lower scoring system. The point totals aren't going to pop off because of that. I think they were the third lowest scoring team in the SHL this year, if I remember correctly, or close to that off the top of my head. I mean, they really don't put a lot of pucks in the net, and that's because of the style of hockey they play. So my bias would be bring Lucas Raymond over to North America. You'll likely end up with him starting in Grand Rapids, although just like we talked about with Jonathan Berggren, I think he deserves a shot to crack the NHL and have the opportunity to have space made for him if he deserves to be there. But I think he's a dynamic playmaker that just needs you know, maybe to play with the puck on a stick a little bit more and kind of see what he can do. But either way, I think you're seeing him in North America next year.
I agree with that. I'd kind of leave, you know, that question of North America or Sweden, honestly, a little bit up to him and where he feels more comfortable, because I agree with what you said. You know, he needs to play with the puck on his stick as much as he can, because ultimately that's what you're hoping he becomes for you as a player who really impacts the game with the puck on his stick, with the passes that he makes and in the entries he's able to create and in the shots he's able to take. I think he can really be a multi-dimensional forward. Again, I don't see him in the opening night lineup, but I'm certainly more than willing to be proved wrong at training camp. And I would imagine the Red Wings kind of feel that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, or at the bare minimum, you have to have the flexibility to make it happen. Right. If he comes in and he knocks down the doors, you have to be in a position to do it.
Yep, I agree. And it's really not unprecedented for a player 1 year out from their draft to do it. I just do wonder, with the missed time at the end of the season, it's not like he blew the doors off the SHL this year. He had a good year, but it wasn't a this guy's too good for this league kind of year in the way that, honestly, it kind of ended up becoming for Moritzider. And so I do wonder, especially after, you know, that injury cost him the back half of the year, if that does, you know, maybe make it more likely that he is not in the NHL lineup on day one.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the challenge with evaluating Raymond's game just comes down to how, you know, again, the first thing people like to look for is the points. Totals, and they're just not there to really signal that, you know, he's jumping off the ice to you. But I think the one thing that I'll point out that may be somewhat exciting is, so at 5-on-5, his goals for percentage was 55.6%. That means when he's on the ice, Frölunda scored 55.6% of the goals that were scored at 5-on-5. When he was off the ice, that actually dropped to 46.7%. So, you know, having almost a 10% tilt in his favor is an encouraging sign that when he's on the ice, the team is being able to at least drive production in the right direction or in their favor.
Yeah, no, that's very important. I mean, it's ultimately probably more than points what he'll be actually measured on by a coaching staff when he is in North America and over there for that matter.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice traits about Raymond is he's coming over as a more polished winger. I think we talk a lot about his playmaking, his hockey sense, but you know, he was billed up to his draft as a two-way dogged forechecker that will chase you down on the back check as well. And so I do think he's got the capacity to be that kind of two-way play driving forward. Maybe, you know, maybe there's a span somewhere between Nino Niederreiter and Mark Stone. Somewhere in between there is what you're maybe hoping that he turns out to be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I also think that the kind of the physical maturity is going to be key for him. How much strength does he put on this offseason and getting himself ready for the NHL and to play against, he's going to play against men either way, but to play against the biggest, fastest, strongest, all in one package that the NHL encompasses. But he's got a lot of time for that. So we'll see where that takes him. We covered Berggren. Do we need to spend any more time on Foligno now that he's in Detroit? I think people kind of seen him here now.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the expectation would be he's back in Detroit to start next season.
And then you go to Albert Johansson, who had a really good year, 19 points in 44 games for Far Eastad. Is that right? I think that's right. I haven't checked it today.
Yeah, 19 points in 44 games. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, a good year for him. And so he now, I think, is a guy that you look at. He's one that I'm curious about where they slot him. I think, in my mind, it would be between the SHL and AHL. I think based on our past conversations, you would at least entertain the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to entertain the NHL with him. And he's a guy that really flew under the radar because of how dominant Sider was in the SHL. But there was a point in time where over the last six seasons, at one point, Sider and Johansson were the most productive defensemen, their seasons this year, of any defenseman in the last 6 years in the SHL. They both kind of slid their last couple of games to where it didn't end up being that way, but both of their seasons finished in the top 10 best offensive scoring seasons for defensemen in the SHL in the last 6 years. So, you know, Johansson has a lot of skills. He's a guy who can carry the puck up. He can break out of his zone well, very smooth skater, and another guy that tilts the ice in his favor. I mean, at 5-on-5, his goals for percentage was 62.3%. And when you end up looking at him when he was off the ice, that dips down significantly from there. So, you know, I think he's a guy that could be a kind of under the radar or maybe a dark horse candidate to steal one of those left-sided spots, depending what the Red Wings do with Danny DeKeyser. Again, he's potentially a buyout candidate this year with only 1 year left. If Dennis Cholowski is claimed, or if, you know, the Wings end up not electing to bring back a John Merrill or anybody else like that, I think you have a potential opening for a guy like Johansson to come in and knock down the doors.
Another guy who I think the physical maturity is going to be key for, how strong can he get? But, you know, would he be the skinniest player in the NHL? Not necessarily.
Not even close.
Well, I mean, Jack Hughes exists, so.
Yeah. Jack Hughes exists, right?
But Jack Hughes, a little bit different, you know, overall picture there, a little more urgency with the number one overall pick usually, but I get your point. So Johansson, I think, had a really good year. I picked him as my breakout prospect coming into the season. Jonathan Berggren made sure that there was no chance anyone else was getting that title, but I still think Johansson more or less lived up to what you were hoping to see from him. It would have been hard to ask for much more from him, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what more you could have asked from him. I mean, he was one of the best defensemen in the SHL this year and just didn't get enough recognition or credit for it. I mean, he scored well, drove play in the favor of his team, did most of his damage at even strength, which is, again, another encouraging sign. I think he only had one power play assist of all of his point totals. So, you know, a very, very interesting guy that when he comes over, I mean, shoot, I would not rule out him being available for the NHL roster.
Very interesting to watch play out. I still think he'll be a little slower, but again, that's kind of a theme here that I'm more on the cautious end of things here, and I think you're ready to push the pace, and I think there's a lot of merit to that, for what it's worth.
I mean, look, I just want to see something different, right? I've been watching the same thing for the last 5 years. Give me something different.
Absolutely. Hey, you know who's been really good in the Finnish League playoffs is Emil Viro. He's a third-round pick from this past draft. We don't have quite the level of advanced stats or anything on the Finnish players that we do on the Swedes. But when you look at Viro and you see the way that he's played in the playoffs with some big goals over there for TPS and in the regular season, I know it's primitive, but you know, a plus 12 for that team, which, you know, for a 18-year-old defenseman in that league is outstanding. Is this another guy who could maybe be on the, you know, he hasn't signed an ELC yet, right?
I don't believe he's signed.
Oh, because his season's still going, but he's the guy who it wouldn't stun me to see an ELC. If the Red Wings wanted to rush that a little bit, he's played basically 2 years of pro now.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, again, you know, for the Red Wings to be able to get him where they got him and then have him go out and have just a really solid season, you know, for TPS and Liga. I mean, he's going to be a heck of a hockey player for them. I wouldn't be surprised if they take a Gustav Lindstrom type of route with him, get the quick signing of the ELC, bring him over to North America and get him in Grand Rapids quickly, because I think he's a really solid defensive defenseman that can skate well, plays his gaps well, you know, can make a good breakout pass. He's certainly not going to be a guy you're going to see on the score sheet all that often, but I just think he's a really solid, you know, second pairing kind of guy. I mean, the Red Wings could very much use him over there, you know, use him in terms of panning out. So my bias would be I would sign his ELC this summer and then bring him over to Grand Rapids for next year.
Skating for him really popped at the World Juniors. I mean, he was a guy who the mobility really stood out from what he put on tape in where was that? Edmonton, Red Deer?
I think it was Red Deer, but I can't remember for sure.
Alberta, we'll say.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, that's kind of the unique thing about him is, you know, whenever people talk about defensive defensemen, you always think of this big, hulking, kind of slower defenseman that kind of just throws their weight around. That's really not Viro whatsoever. He's almost a similar build to Albert Johansson, maybe a little bit bit more weight, although Elite Prospects doesn't necessarily give him a more weight. They both have him listed at 165 pounds. But I think he is built a little bit you know, more sturdy than Johansson. But he does all of his stuff through his skating, positioning, and his ability to read the play in closed gaps. So that's what excites you about this. It's not just a guy winning defensive battles because of his size. He's winning it because of his brain and his ability to move his feet. And so I think I'm kind of excited about what he can bring over in Grand Rapids. And again, another guy that potentially factors into the future for the Red Wings.
I think a lot of those same things you just said would apply to the other Red Wings third round pick from 2020, Donovan Cibrango.
Yeah, I mean, Cibrango got moved quicker than I think a lot of people expected, although out of necessity.
By necessity, yeah.
Right. Out of necessity, being able to play in the AHL this year. And he has not looked out of place for, you know, those who have been able to catch a lot of the Griffins games. I think he's been a very solid addition to their blue line, provides, again, some of that, you know, grit, that defensive ability. Again, another guy that's not going to be on the score sheet, like we just said with Viro, but has done well and held his own, I think, at the AHL level.
Yep, he has. And the fact that the OHL got canceled, I think, sets up a really, you know, interesting situation for him next year, where he's going to have effectively played 25 to 30 games against, you know, true pros in the AHL, guys that are, you know, in many instances 10 years older than him. And then you're going to go ask him to spend his next year in the OHL against guys his own age. And, you know, maybe that sets him up to dominate. Maybe that really is not a, you know, ideal development path for him, though. You know, I think it's always fine to go to a level and be the man there. But to the point that I think you've made in the past, don't you want to be kind of always still pushing and not, you know, letting guys kind of just stay there too long and have it be too easy for him?
Yeah, I think that's the huge concern with Cibrango going backwards by such a huge degree. I mean, there's a huge step down from the AHL to the OHL. You have to wonder, you know, do you end up picking up bad habits that you can get away with at the OHL level that you couldn't get away with at the AHL level? And do you ultimately see some sort of regression or even stagnation of his development because he doesn't necessarily have to do as much to be that as successful? You know, all of that's hypothetical. You don't really know the answer to that. I'm hopeful that, you know, the NHL and the CHL work out this agreement where, you know, like you offered on the last episode, Max, potentially you waive the need to go back for the guys that were able to play in the AHL this year. You know, you're talking about guys like Quentin Byfield, although he likely would have done that anyways. And you know, other players that were able to benefit from no OHL right. season. Potentially you exempt them from having to go back, and then you just pick up the agreement as it is. And hopefully it works out like that, because if not, I am a little nervous about him going backwards to by such a degree.
Yeah, my argument would be for an exceptional circumstance, you know, anyone who spent more than, let's say, 15 games in the AHL this season should be allowed to stay in the AHL next season. That'd be my pitch, I guess. You know, there's nothing behind that. This is completely me free offering this up here. But that would be my pitch to make, is that, you know, you can't really ask a kid to do that. I mean, even like a Brant Clark, like, you know, he goes and he plays against men in Slovakia all year. Like, I know that ultimately he was going to come back to the OHL if the OHL started up, but like, I don't know how you can go from playing against men. And I know every year guys do it. Like, didn't Jan Michak or whatever go from playing against men last year to the OHL midseason? And
yeah.
Yeah, so I know what happens. I just think it's a big ask of a kid to do that. And I do wonder what effects it has. I mean, I guess no one ever complained about piling up points and playing against, you know, competition that you were able to dominate against. But I do think there's a lot to be said for, you know, staying at the level that, you know, once you've been challenged at this level, being allowed to continue to be challenged by that level and make those improvements at that level and not kind of use it as a little lab and then take it back to the OHL where, you know, maybe you can, you know, work on some of the things that you learned you need to work on the AHL, but you're not doing it against the same kind of pressure, against the same kind of competition.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think the frustrating part for Sabrango is by the NHL-CHL agreement, Sabrango misses the ability to be exempt from this by 12 days. His birthday is January 12th. You have to be 20 by December 31st of that year. So he's literally missing it by 12 days to be able to stay in the AHL level, which is just, it's just so frustrating that that's what ends up being the difference here. So I'm hopeful that there is some sort of exemption or some other amendment worked in so that he doesn't have to go back and do this along with a handful of the other guys that have to.
Yeah. One guy who we do expect to be back in Grand Rapids next year is Jared McIsaac. I didn't even expect him to be healthy to play this year. Someone asked me like a week before he came back if there was an update on him. And I went and I looked at my inbox from when the surgery happened and it said it'd be whatever, 5 to 6 months. And I said, okay, it hasn't even been five, or maybe it's barely been five. So I wouldn't count on seeing him at all this year. A week later, he's in the lineup and he's played 7 games. And, you know, I think for him just to get back this year, again, this happened the last time he had shoulder surgery too. He made it back in time for the World Juniors. Ultimately, I do think this says a lot about Jared McIsaac, that he's getting himself back from these injuries. He's working really hard to get it on the front end of these timelines. It certainly tells you something about him as a kid. You definitely want him to stay healthy at some point, and I promise he wants it more than anybody else. But what do you envision for Jared McIsaac this year? I mean, you know, points wise, I don't think it was ever going to be the move to measure, his progress by his points this year coming back from that. But he does have, one assist in 7 games so far.
Yeah. I think time is going to be the biggest thing with McIsaac, because he was a guy that was very, very promising coming into, the draft. And then ultimately he's had multiple shoulder injuries that have really derailed his development. But I mean, he's a guy that if he can get back to that level where, I mean, he was a point per game defenseman for Halifax, and then I think he's a guy that can maybe offer you a little bit more point scoring and a little bit more of that two-way rounded out game than maybe Vero or Sabrango. But the issue that you run into is now, you know, McIsaac is now in his D+3 year. He is a couple years ahead of both of those guys. The time is sort of running out to see more of that from him. But if you can get a full year healthy, next year, all in Grand Rapids. I think that'll be the key to seeing kind of what his trajectory is going to look like moving forward.
Yeah, and it's still ultimately a guy who's still just turned 21. Like, you know,
right?
I don't think the clock is that loud for him yet, especially when you talk about in comparison to a guy like a Chalowski who, you know, what, two drafts before McIsaac was,
yep,
was and he's only kind of just now, you know, if he even is right now, kind of establishing himself on the NHL. I think he's looked pretty good with Phil Pronick, by the way, but I think McIsaac has time to get it worked out. Maybe you learn something from the Chalowski path, and you make sure he's ready before you bring him up. I mean, very different situations because of the injury either way. For what it's worth, when I watched Grand Rapids, which I have not watched all seven of his games, but the games I have watched of theirs with him in the lineup, I think he's looked like he fits in. He doesn't look out of place. He looks pretty smooth. So I think, you know, you give him a full summer on the ice and working with the skills coaches, and then you get him back for next season, give him a full season. I would be very curious to see. I think he's a guy who can reestablish himself kind of in the way that Berggren did this year. Berggren was starting to drift off the radar after injuries in the last 2 years before this year, and he put himself not just back on it, but on it in a big way.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you're hoping for with McIsaac. And I'll clarify, like, my comments about, you know, time running out. So kind of the way I view a lot of these prospects is from the time of their draft, when they're 18 years old, I give kind of like a 7-year clock, and that's your 7-year clock to become an NHL regular player. And if you're not an NHL regular at 25, there's a solid chance that there's not a lot left. You know, there's not really a lot left for you to develop more. There's certainly cases where you have guys just take massive jumps, you know, after that time point. I think, you know, William Karlsson's the example that always gets thrown around. But, you know, Karlsson was still in the NHL. He just wasn't, you know, scoring 40 goals like he did for Vegas as soon as he got sent over there. Jonathan Marchessault is another guy that kind of falls that. But you set a couple of those oddities aside. By and large, if you're not an NHL regular player by the age of 25, there's a solid chance you're not going to be an NHL regular player. And so when you have these guys lose those developmental years, it's basically like now instead of having 7 days to cram for a test, you have 4 days to cram for a test. And you can still get the same information, but I think your curve sort of steepens in terms of how much you need to learn and how quickly it needs to happen, because that 25 clock is not just the player necessarily aging out of their peak, but it's also all the guys drafted behind them on their development curves. And so that's why I kind of put that arbitrary clock out there as kind of a rough guideline on how to view these players. So, you know, McIsaac having lost, you know, really 2 years to kind of the shoulder injuries, he's working from behind the curve. And so that's not to say he can't get there, but he has more work to do than the guys behind him. And I think he's got all the talent in the world. There's a reason why people thought he was a steal when the Red Wings got him in the 30s in the 2018 draft. A lot of people had him as a first round talent. So he has that potential. It's just his curve is now needs to be accelerated.
Good point. All right. Another guy who you could say that kind of 7-year clock is ticking for, although, you know, much kind of less high profile prospect as McIsaac, who was an early second round pick, is Chase Pearson. 2015 fifth round pick. He's 23, going to be 24 this summer. You know, when I looked this week, he's having a pretty good year for the Grand Rapids Griffins, 17 points in 23 games. He's actually third on the team in scoring behind only Riley Barber, who's a point-per-game guy, and Tara Hirose, who's right there as a point-per-game guy. Chase Pearson, of course, can also play center. He's a bigger body. You know, as under 24 AHL players go, this is not an uncompetitive total for him.
No, it's really not, and he's doing it in a decent role. I think pick 224 has him estimated playing almost 17 minutes a night with a solid even strength goals for percentage of 52%. I mean, he's a guy that if you decide that you're not going to bring back any of those veteran centers, you're going to part ways with Sam Gagner, you're going to part ways with Glenn Denning, you're going to part ways with Darren Helm. Potentially, this is a guy you bring up to your fourth line and let him see if he can handle those duties. And I've been a long advocate for bringing some of those younger players in to handle some of those bottom six roles when you're able to do that, because I think it's really the only way you're ever going to be able to see what you have in these guys. Otherwise, you're continuing to re-sign them and give them those contracts while not really ever having a place for them at the NHL level, which I think is number one, it takes up just one of your contracts that you get, your 50 contracts.
Right.
And then number two, it's sort of like, well, what's the development for the development plan for this player to ever get that opportunity? And then again, you know, as that clock starts to tick, and these guys behind him start to pass him by, like all of a sudden that window starts to close and close and close. And so I'd like to see him get an opportunity to play on the fourth line next year. I think he could be an effective energy guy for the Wings. But time will tell. I mean, I guess we'll just see the route they end up going. But if you end up bringing back two of those veteran players, I don't see how there's any space for him moving forward.
It's right about on par with where now Luke Glendening has a, you know, a clear skill set at that age. You know, he was a defensive stopper almost, you know, right about this same age in his career in the NHL, going up against that Johnson line in the playoffs. But it is, for the record, right about where Luke Glendening was producing at this same age, at the same point in his career.
Yeah. And so give him a shot, right? Glendening had the work ethic that was unmatched, and that's what allowed him to carve out his role at the NHL level and basically not allow him to be sent anywhere. So you would need the same thing from Chase Pearson if you're going to ultimately part ways with Glendening this offseason. And so I think if you approach him with that kind of mentality, saying, look, we'll give you a shot, but you got to work your butt off here to keep that spot. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that would respond to that.
We'll see how it goes. I also, again, I'm someone who thinks that if they brought back Luke Glendening for a year, that's a fine decision. Ultimately, you don't have to have Chase Pearson in the opening night lineup. You know, like you said, he may never have a spot as a regular on this team. That's totally plausible as an outcome here. And as a fifth-round pick, that's kind of what you expect. But if you want to have him learn from Luke Glendening or anything like that, you know, that's an option here too.
Yeah, it really is.
So, but a nice season for Chase Pearson no matter what happens there. I've gotten kind of derailed as I map out all these prospects. We should probably get to Elmer Soderblom in the SHL. And although he played a little bit, did he go to the Allsvenskan for any amount of time, or was that just
no J20? Yeah, Niederbach's the only one that I think went Allsvenskan, if I remember correctly.
So let's do both of those two here back to back, starting with Soderblom.
Yeah, I mean, Soderblom, obviously a behemoth of a player that we've talked about a handful of times, you know, on the show. I think he's an outstanding hockey player and really a guy that's kind of burst onto the scene as a sixth round pick from 2019. I don't think a lot of people were expecting that much from him, but I mean, sure enough, he has forced his way onto Frölunda and played a handful of games for them at the big leagues and didn't look necessarily out of place. I mean, we've seen his insane skill from the World Juniors. He's a guy that is very intriguing to me. I'm not really sure what to make of him and kind of what he's going to be able to do at the NHL level. And as he continues to progress, I think he's maybe a guy that would benefit from a larger role in the SHL for another season. So if you look at him, he played 25 games for or 28 games for Frölunda this year, I believe, but played just about 9 minutes a night. So he's a guy that potentially, if you bring Lucas Raymond over and he's not on that team anymore, and you open up maybe a spot for Soderblom to be able to move up in the lineup, I think that would be a more attractive option as opposed to bring him over to Grand Rapids, at least at this point.
Yeah, I think Soderblom, you're thinking still long term. The irony is he's the biggest of these guys. He's the one that probably would be pushed around the least if he were to come over into the NHL tomorrow. But I would slow play this one quite a bit. And I think you're still looking, you know, multiple years out with Elmer Soderblom if he's going to make it. And again, being picked where he is, that should not be your expectation. But he's done enough in these two. He's still only 19 years old to think that, you know he will turn 20 this summer. But to think that, you know, he's given himself at least, he's put himself on the radar. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, and again, remember the default you should have for the sixth round pick is they're not an NHL player. They're barely an AHL player.
Right.
And so to have a guy that's on your radar for being on your NHL roster, you know, in their D+ 2 year here, I think that's really exciting. So I would keep the expectations tempered. You're going to continue to slow play this. I want to see more of them at the SHL level where, you know, as the level increases, the question increasingly will become, is he successful because of his size or is he able to use his size to be successful?
Yep.
That'll be the question for Soderblom as he gets a bigger and bigger roles. But yeah, I think you'll see him maybe with a bigger role in the SHL next year.
And I think you probably say the same for Theodore Niederbach, second round pick this year. He spent time in three different levels this year, dominated the J20 level with Frölunda, like absolute monster, almost 2 points per game there until that league got shut down. Then he ends up loaned out to the Allsvenskan, where he's really good against men. 9 points in 15 games for a player in his draft plus one. That's nothing to sneeze at. And then he ends up back in Frölunda for the end of the year, and he had some games early on as well. He ends up with 5 points in 20 games. I think that's pretty comparable to what Soderblom did. And he's obviously not the physical presence that Elmer Soderblom is, but the hockey sense is kind of the story with Theodore Niederbach. And this is a guy you're hoping can someday become an offensive piece for you, an offensive weapon, ideally a center for you for the Red Wings down the line. A good year for Theodore, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, a really good year. It's a little bit unfortunate kind of how Frölunda's system was kind of set up from the year, in that he was a guy that was way too good for J20, but they just couldn't give him the minutes necessary at the SHL, and so ends up loaned out to the Allsvenskan. That's fine. I mean, I think he played well in the Allsvenskan. He scored well, drove play, got 17 minutes a night. That's the kind of season you needed to see from him. Did it over playing with William Wallander on Moto. So, a good opportunity for him there. And then I think moving forward, you're looking for the exact same thing as Soderblom. Hoping he gets a bigger role with Frölunda next season and can continue to kind of carve out his really good two-way game. I mean, he was a guy that I was extremely excited about when he was drafted. He's a high hockey IQ player. A guy that can really do everything for you, projects to maybe be a second line center at the NHL level, if all the cards kind of fall right. So another one to watch in the SHL next year.
And then another Swede, another second round pick from this year, William Wallander. His program in Moto is in the Allsvenskan. And so I'm curious to see where he goes for next year. Does he stay in Moto? Is there another team that he ends up playing for there? But he didn't blow the doors off the Allsvenskan either. I mean, 6 points in 43 games. He's a minus 12 on the season. I mean, that certainly, this is a player who, since the day he was drafted, we've been saying, think about this pick 4 years down the road, more so than as an immediate timeline kind of thing. What do you want to see out of William Wallander through this summer and into next year?
I think the big thing you want to see with Wallander is him continue to work on, his in-zone kind of defensive coverages, his ability to recognize plays earlier, his ability to understand kind of when to switch off, when to rotate with, his ability to pick up players through traffic, and then his ability to close gaps. I think really a lot of Wallander's work is going to be on the defensive side of the puck. I think he's a good skater. He's got all the tools you want to see. I mean, he can join the rush. He can, play that offensive game, but he's not going to be successful at the NHL level until he can round out his own in-zone defensive coverage. Didn't look great in Allsvenskan this year, had a 40.9% 5-on-5 goals for percentage, which was, 12% worse than when he was off the ice. So, that's not encouraging in that sense, but you're hoping that he continues to work this out. I mean, at the time of the draft, he was a project player, and you're hoping that he continues to just put the time in and get those developments moving forward.
The final 2020 second round pick the Red Wings made this year was Cross Hannes. We, I think, have talked earlier this season on the show about the struggles he had in the USHL this year, 16 points in 27 games, which when you compare it to what he did in his draft year in the WHL, not all that impressive. He's had two games back in the WHL since returning, and 0 points in those games, but it's just two games. But where are you at on Cross Hannes right now? How high should the panic threshold be, or are you pretty willing to throw this year out given the circumstances?
He did have the challenge of, number one, jumping from the WHL to the USHL, which is just an odd transition. It's a very different style of hockey in the USHL compared to the WHL. So, that was a huge challenge for him. I think he was very frustrated with it. I mean, you saw it. I think he had multiple games where he had multiple misconducts, finished with 99 penalty minutes in 27 games in the USHL, really struggled to score and contribute. you know, I guess in any meaningful way with Lincoln. He was, you know, once the WHL picked back up, he was able to get a couple games in, you know, back with Portland, but again, wasn't able to get on the score sheet. He's a guy who at the time of the pick was a bit of a reach. I think a lot of people had him in the 70s and 80s on their boards, at least in the public boards. The Wings take him at 55. He's a guy with great hands, can do a lot of things with the puck, but you need to see more from his skating, more from his ability to move his feet, and more willingness to play that defensive coverage for him to move forward. I think this is maybe, I don't know that you should say the panic button is high, because, you know, obviously we'll see what he does in a more normal year next year. But he's a guy who already, because kind of had the deck stacked against him, being that he was sort of a reach relative to public perception, and has a lot of things that he's got to work on to get to that next level. So I am a little bit nervous about, you know, him kind of making that transition and continuing to take steps forward.
All right. And then last one we'll do, 2019 second round pick, Robert Mastrosimoni, forward from Boston University. Statistically, basically gave you the same thing he gave you as a freshman. BU was in a tough spot. They only played, I think, 15 games, or at least he only played 15 games. And so Robert Mastrosimoni is a guy who I think you're starting to look toward next year. But again, this is a guy who, when you talk about college players, the junior year is crucially important, because if they have to go back for their senior year, it puts free agency on the table. Really, if you're the Red Wings, you are hoping for a huge breakthrough junior year from Robert Mastrosimoni. And I think that's a pretty important one to watch coming into next year. Maybe one of the most important ones to watch next year.
Yeah, I think he's probably the most important one to watch, because he was a guy, again, at the time of the draft, a lot of people had him penciled in as potentially a second or third line winger. You know, the relentless motor, great shot, ability to kind of manipulate shooting angles, a lot of the things that were really, really exciting to see. And then, you know, with the challenges of the NCAA, with the challenges at BU, didn't really have a great sophomore season in the way that you were hoping he would. So, yes, I think he's probably the most important one to watch for next season, in terms of whether or not the Wings will have another, you know, top six, top nine winger, or if they need to, you know, or where he's going to maybe project and fall, I guess, after, if he doesn't end up looking like that.
Yeah. I forgot to put out a mailbag call today, but I actually had one handy, so we'll just do that as our one mailbag offering for today, if that works.
That works.
All right, Dan Falconer wants us to talk about Jonathan Bernier, and if the Red Wings specifically do not bring back Bernier, who could be brought in for 21-22, specifically when it comes to free agency?
Yeah, I mean, this is the million-dollar question. I think Bernier's a guy who has been incredible for the Red Wings over the last 2 years. Really, really can't say enough about just, number one, his performance in 2019-2020. I think that was remarkable, and I believe he's deserved a Vezina consideration at certain times. Obviously, that didn't end up working out that way. And this year, I think he's been just as good. And now with Grice picking up, I think you can argue the Wings have, you know, arguably one of the top five goalie tandems in the league. So you bring him back, you can certainly run that back. I don't think he costs you more than he really cost you this year. You know, at $3 million, potentially maybe $3.5 million is where you end up landing him. But if you do go the free agency route, I think there's a handful of guys you can look at. You know, last year I was advocating for Thomas Grice, and the Wings end up with Thomas Grice. If you don't go that route, you know, James Reimer has looked pretty solid in Carolina. He's had his ups and downs, but it looks like he might be an odd man out with Alex Nedeljkovic really, you know, coming on strong. And Peter Mrazek is a few years younger than him. So I think that's probably how Carolina stays. You know, Dave Riddich is a guy who got moved from Calgary to Toronto. I think he's a guy who can potentially come in and backstop a few games for you. So that's another option there in free agency. And then outside of that, you know, you can always revisit the conversation with the Rangers and see if they're willing to part with one of their goalies, you know, between Georgiev and who's the other one here that I'm forgetting, Max?
Well, it was Lundqvist, but he's gone. But then Shesterkin obviously is their number one.
Yeah, and so if they run back with Shesterkin and Georgiev, or if you can, again, pry Georgiev away from them, I think that's another way to think about it. But yeah, I mean, I think those are a couple of guys that you can look at in free agency. I think my money would probably be first bring back Jonathan Bernier, but if not, I think James Reimer, Dave Riddich are probably two reasonable options that'll be relatively cheap.
Any interest in Chris Driedger?
I don't think so, based on what he's going to cost.
Okay.
I think he's played himself into a contract north of $4 million. I don't know if everyone believes that. That's sort of my inclination at the moment, is that he probably played himself in that regard. And if I'm Florida, I'm finding a way to see if I can do a sign-in trade or something so I can get something for him. But yeah, I'll be intrigued to see what happens with him.
He's the only guy who stands out on the free agent market as young enough that you could potentially hope that they become a longer-term solution. But, you know, I do believe kind of one of the themes that you've stressed on this podcast for a long time is that, you know, a long-term goalie solution is kind of a, you can kind of tell yourself you have one, but you're going to have to be reassessing it every year anyway. It's not the worst thing to keep having short-term ones. And from that framework, I think even if you stripped away the names and their current teams, Jonathan Bernier would be one of the first names you land on in free agency as guys who fit.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at, because again, you know, you can go back and go through this. Look at all the goalie contracts that are longer than 4 years when you attempt to lock in your long-term deal. How many of them actually remain good contracts for the duration of the contract? Outside of Henrik Lundqvist, I can't really say that, you know, many do. I mean, we're already talking about Carey Price's decline. We've talked about Jonathan Quick's decline for a couple of years. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky, look where he's at. I think that's already a huge issue. So, you know, there are guys out there that are attractive and you want to maybe lock them up for several years and it may work out for you for a short period of time. And maybe that's enough to win you a cup. But if the concern is then when you move past those years where maybe your team is not as stacked and now you've got a lot of money tied up in those goalies, I don't know that I would go that route. And I think that's sort of what Driedger is looking for or will be receiving in terms of offers. So I don't think that the Wings should be in contention here.
All right. Anything else before we wrap it up?
I think that's it.
Just extend our open invitation right now to John Davidson and Jeff Gorton if they'd like to come on the podcast this week, next week.
Yeah. I mean, if they'd like to come in and talk about, you know, their version of the events, I'm more than happy to listen to that. We can talk about how, you know, the 1994 New York Knicks would look on the ice. I'm very curious to see who the Anthony Mason equivalent would be. So I'd love to get their take on that.
All right. Well, Jeff and John, considered official. You're free to come on Wings for Breakfast. DM me and we'll make it happen. For the rest of you, we will talk to you on Monday. Take care.